positive change going to happen. So, you know, there was that unguarded opening that hopefully people are now going to start closing. It'll be a closed and guarded thing. And so we do see that change starting to happen now in society as a result.
That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. This concludes part one of the interview with Carissa Conti. Visit inothernewsradio.com for archives and more information about the guests.
WBAI is the radio station speaking truth to power, presenting a range of alternative views so you can keep your sanity, like Elvis Costello says as he walks through troubled times. What's so funny about this love and understanding? And for WBAI to continue, we must pay rent at 4 Times Square, which houses WBAI's transmitter.
We're 2 months behind on that rent, so it's $34,000. So that's a lot we have to catch up on. So a really good reason to support WBAI right now. So help the one truly listener-sponsored radio station pay for the rent to house our transmitter. Say, yes. This is a donation.
2 months behind, folks.
Yes.
What are you going to do when it's gone? Then right. You're going to have to listen pancake recipes by Brian Lair.
Yeah. $17,000 a month is what it costs, and we are trying to raise enough funds to pay back rent from 2021 and the rent for 2022. Please go to towerfund.wbai.org, towerfund.wbai.org, and donate to keep listener-sponsored WBAI broadcasting into the future, or call 212-209-2950 and say you want to donate to WBAI's Tower Fund. Thank you. It's time for the WBAI Playhouse. Tonight, LA Theater Works presents I Love Lucy, A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Sitcom. It's by Greg Oppenheimer. He's the son of I Love Lucy creator Jess Oppenheimer. The play's the story of Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz as they battle a television network and a sponsor to get I Love Lucy on the air. Here we go.
I'm Oscar Nunez.
I'm Julie White.
I'm Matthew Floyd Miller.
I'm Rosemarie DeWitt.
I'm Seamus Dever.
This is LA Theater Works. I'm Susan Lowenberg. The on-screen pairing of Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz is at the heart of one of the most popular TV shows in history. Who would have thought that to get on the air, they had to battle both a network and a sponsor who thought the show couldn't possibly succeed? Playwright Greg Oppenheimer, son of I Love Lucy's creator Jess Oppenheimer, spins the hilarious true story behind America's beloved TV comedy. And now, LA Theater Works presents I Love Lucy, A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Sitcom by Greg Oppenheimer, starring Oscar Nunez as Ricky Ricardo and Sarah Drew as Lucille Ball. Also starring Ron Botita, Seamus Dever, Abigail Marks, Matthew Floyd Miller, Rob Nagel, and Nick Torrey.
You know why I Love Lucy was created? Lucy and I wanted to start a family. And the only way we could do that was to work on something together. That's the whole reason. So now you know the why. But the how? That's a funny story. But don't worry, amigos. I'm going to explain the whole thing. Okay? Cue my orchestra. In 1949, both of our careers were going pretty good. My records were selling and my band was so popular that we were on tour most of the time. Meanwhile, Lucy was in Hollywood making pictures and starring in a radio show called My Favorite Husband.
George. George, are you asleep?
Not anymore.
I can't sleep.
Why not?
Well, I've got a string tied around my finger, and I can't remember why.
Liz, you're always waking me up in the middle of the night with some silly question. I've told you before, this has got to stop. Now, will you please keep quiet and let me get some sleep?
All right, George. George, I just remembered what the string was for.
What?
To remind me not to wake you up anymore in the middle of the night. Well, good night, George.
My Favorite Husband, starring Lucille Ball with Richard Denning. Tonight's program was produced and directed by Jess Oppenheimer, who wrote the script with Madeline Pugh and Bob Carroll Jr. Be sure to listen to Lucille Ball and My Favorite Husband again next week, brought to you by the Jell-O family of Red Letter Desserts. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System. Bob Lamon speaking.
And we're out. Thanks, everybody.
Lucy! Lucy! Betty Garrett, come on down here.
Hiya, Lucy.
Betty, I haven't seen you in ages. How are you?
Pregnant.
Oh, you lucky bum. Desi and I have been trying.
Oh, just put your feet up against the wall afterward. It worked for us.
Okay, I will. So what else is new? Are you still at Metro?
Are you kidding? As soon as they found out I was in a family way, I was out on the street.
Oh.
That darn pregnancy clause. Say, can you and Desi join us for dinner?
Desi's on the road again with his band. He'll be back in a couple of weeks, unless he gets another booking.
I hate to break this to you, Lucy, but trying to get pregnant works a whole lot better when you are both in the same city.
Yeah, well, but what can I do? Oh, here comes our producer. I'm sorry, Betty. Let's get together soon. You've got my number, don't you?
Sure do.
Well, then call me tomorrow.
Okay. Bye, Lucy.
Bye-bye. Well, boss man, how'd we do tonight?
You were both fine.
Here comes the other shoe.
What do you mean?
I get the distinct feeling you're not telling us something.
No, really, Dick. It was very good. It's just that I know you can do better.
See, Lucille, what did I tell you? What exactly do you mean, Jess?
Well, you could start by loosening up more. Have more fun with it. Ham it up. Dramatize what's going on instead of keeping your eyes glued to the page.
I'm sorry, Jess. That's something I just can't do.
Why not?
Because if I ever take my eye off that script, I'll never find my place again.
How do you know until you try it?
Oh, I've tried it.
And?
Let's just say it's an experience I'm not eager to repeat.
But if you'll just
try,
Dick,
trying to change my mind on this, Jess. You're just wasting your time. Anyway, I've got to get going. I'll see you Monday at the read-through. Bye, Lucille.
Bye-bye, Dick.
What about you, Lucy? Are you afraid of losing your place, too?
No, but Jess, this is radio, not theater. The people listening at home can't see what I'm doing, no matter where I look or how much I move around.
But there's a studio full of people right here who can see you. They are your audience. The folks listening at home take their cue from them. Believe me. The moment you look up from your script and start acting things out, the listening audience will know the difference, and they will love you for it. Listen, did I ever tell you about my first job in Hollywood?
No, I don't think so.
I was writing for Fred Astaire's radio show. Every week, the highlight was Fred's big dance number. Dance on the radio. And the only people who ever saw it were the ones in the studio.
Well,
then I went to work for Jack Benny. You know, Jack always gets bigger laughs between the lines than he does for the jokes themselves. You know how he does it?
How?
He lays his hand against his cheek, and he opens his eyes wide, and he looks out at the studio audience, slowly turning his head like a comic lighthouse. And the longer he looks, the more they laugh.
But what if they don't laugh when I look at them?
Don't worry, they will.
I don't know.
Here, I got something for you.
A Jack Benny ticket? What are these for?
I want you to go to school.
Lucy went to the Jack Benny program that Sunday, and when she showed up for the next rehearsal, she couldn't wait to try the new attitude she discovered. On that week's show, Lucy started hamming it up, playing it straight to the audience. And Jess was right. They loved it. And the show's ratings went up too. So much that a network VP named Harry Ackerman asked our agent Don Sharp about starring Lucy in a TV version of the show. But as the brass at CBS found out, Lucy had other ideas.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon, Mr. Paley.
Well, Harry, let's have your report.
I'm afraid we've hit a snag, Mr. Paley. Dawn Sharp won't even discuss a TV deal for Lucy unless her husband, Desi Arnaz, is her co-star.
Desi Arnaz, the conga player? Why the hell would I want to star Desi Arnaz in a television series? Listen, Harry, I know Sharp represents both Lucy and her husband, but it's his job to find work for both of them, not mine. What did you tell him?
I told him we've got nothing against Desi, just that with a successful series, the wisest thing is to transfer it to television intact, including the cast.
Exactly, and?
And he told me that if we want to move the show to TV, we've got just two casting choices. Change the male lead to Desi, or change the female lead to someone other than Lucy.
I can't believe it.
Believe it, Mr. Paley. He was dead serious.
What do you think, Hubble?
It makes no sense. Why would they blow a television deal over this?
According to Dawn, Lucy's worried sick about Desi spending all his time on the road with his band. She wants him here in Hollywood where she can keep an eye on him. But I told him my favorite husband is the wrong vehicle for Desi.
So what did he say?
He made it clear that if Lucy's going to do a television series, Desi's going to be her co-star. If we can't put Desi in My Favorite Husband, he says we'll just have to find her a show that we can put him in.
How did you leave it?
I told him we'd get back to him.
Hubble, I believe I asked you for your opinion. I'm still waiting to hear it.
Mr. Paley, we can't cast Desi as Lucy's husband. I mean, have you heard the fellow talk? Half the time I can't even understand what he's saying.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
And what has she got against Dick Denning anyway? He's tall, blonde, handsome, just the type of all-American leading man a girl like Lucille should have on her television show.
Good point. All right, Harry, you tell Sharp that I've got no problem having Desi Arnaz appear on the network as a band leader or a singer, but not as Lucille's husband. Nobody would believe it. It's simply out of the question.
I'll tell him, Mr. Paley.
Well, that'll be Harry Ackerman, Lucy. Why don't you let me get it?
No, I'll get it, Don. I've got a thing or two I'd like to tell him. Hello? Hello, Harry. He's here, but whatever you have to say, you can say to me. Yeah, I know all about that. Did you talk to Bill Paley? Well, what did he say? What do you mean nobody'd believe Desi is my husband? He is my husband. Of course audiences will accept us together. Why wouldn't they? Well, that's just a load of bull. Now look, Harry, this is important to me. Desi's on the road all the time with his band. If I can't find a way to keep him at home, I'm afraid I'm going to lose him. Well, you tell Bill Paley that if I can't work with Desi at CBS, I'll just have to go on the road with him. That's all. I've never been more serious. Yes, I realize that. If I have to give up pictures, that's what I'll do. Yes, it's that important to me. You tell him that. All right. Goodbye, Harry.
Well, I think you made your position pretty clear.
A lot of good that'll do me if the answer is still no.
Now, we don't know that. Though, hey, speaking of CBS, Harlan Thompson called today. He wants you to go on the Ed Wynn show.
Well, have they got something for Desi to do?
No, not that they mentioned, but I'm sure they'll come up with something if that's your condition for doing the show.
You bet it is. From now on, if anyone wants me for television, they get Desi too. That ought to convince Bill Paley that the public will accept us as a team.
Lucy and I were a hit on the Ed Wynn show, but that wasn't enough to convince CBS. So I say, look, honey, if you really want to try this thing, you should go with me on the next tour that I do with the band on the stage. And that's just what we did. We launched our vaudeville act using $5,000 of our own money and toured the country while her radio show was on summer hiatus. The tour was a big success, but CBS still wouldn't come to the table. Not until December, when Harry Ackerman found out we had a TV offer from another network.
Gentlemen, just how serious is this offer from NBC? Harry?
It's real, Mr. Paley. I believe they're ready to sign Lucy and Desi to a TV deal.
Then we got to nip this in the bud. We'll make a deal with Lucille first.
With Desi Arnaz as her co-star?
Of course. You think she's just going to give up on that now with an offer from NBC in her pocket? No, we'll just have to make the best of it.
With all respect, Mr. Paley, don't you think someone like Arnaz is going to be a tougher sell on national TV than on the vaudeville stage? I mean, how is he going to play in Peoria?
I don't know, Hubble, but I do know this. I'm not about to let NBC steal one of my biggest stars. Make the deal.
Yes, Mr. Paley.
I'll call Don and tell him we're ready to talk turkey. But it may be tough sledding now that NBC is in the game. We need to do something for Lucy. Something to remind her that she's part of the CBS family.
What did you have in mind?
Well, you know how anxious she is to keep Desi close to home.
I thought that's what the TV show was for.
Yeah, but that's not till next fall.
Okay, then what's your idea?
Give Desi his own radio program. It'll keep him in town until fall and keep his band employed to boot.
That's very clever, except for one problem. Desi Arnaz isn't enough of a name to have his own musical variety show.
I agree, Mr. Paley, but I'm not talking about musical variety. I'm talking about a game show. You know the one? Earn Your Vacation? It goes on the air in a few weeks. I'm suggesting we put Desi in as host.
Desi Arnaz? A game show host? That's an even bigger stretch than playing Lucille's husband.
Now, hear me through on this, Hub. The show's unsponsored, so we can make any changes we want. What if we made all the prizes trips to the Caribbean? Yeah? And we can change the name of the show. Call it something like Your Tropical Trip.
You know, that's not half bad.
All right, you may have something there, Harry. But haven't we already hired a host for that show?
Well, yes, but it's just a staff announcer at Channel 2 in L.A. What's he going to do, boycott the Columbia Broadcasting System?
If it'll help us hold on to Lucille Ball, he can be my guest. What do I care if I lose one crummy announcer to NBC? Oh, by the way, who is the poor schmuck?
Oh, his name's Carson. Johnny Carson?
So CBS gave us a TV pilot deal. And with the offer from NBC, my radio show wasn't the only concession we got. They gave us a 50% stake in the TV series, which would air only every other week from Hollywood, so Lucy could keep making pictures. At the time, there was no such thing as a nationwide broadcast, so that meant the East Coast was going to have to wait a week to watch a low-quality kinescope film print. But to keep Lucy happy, CBS agreed.
Jess, we did it! We got CBS to make a TV deal for both of us.
Harry called me last night. Congratulations.
And Desi's going to have his own radio show starting next month.
And I've got even bigger news. Lucy is going to have a baby.
Wow! That must have been some negotiation.
Oh, isn't it wonderful? We're finally going to have a real family. Oh, you know, they wanted us to do the show in New York. I told them, forget it. We're going to raise our children right here in California.
That's wonderful, Lucy. I'm really happy for both of you.
But we've got to hurry and make an audition film before I show too much. Have you got any ideas yet?
You do realize I got the news less than 12 hours ago.
Yeah, well, my due date is in July, and Dr. Harris says I'll be showing by February. He doesn't even want me doing the radio show after the end of March.
Don't worry. Just give me a little time, and I'll come up with something.
Now, remember, I want to play an ordinary housewife in a normal marriage.
Turning the two of you into an ordinary married couple isn't that easy. I've been racking my brain trying to figure out how to do it.
If you're worried about me, Jess, don't be. I can handle whatever you come up with.
It's not that at all, Desi. We just need a believable premise that's a good fit for both of you.
I'm glad you feel that way. If it were up to CBS, I wouldn't even be in this thing.
I just need to come up with something that lets Lucy be an ordinary housewife and gives you the chance to showcase your talent.
Then we better let you get back to work.
Okay, I'll talk to you later.
Bye-bye, boss man.
Wait a second. Wait a second.
What is it?
I've been going about this backwards. Lucy is the one who needs to prove she's got talent.
What are you talking about? Everyone knows how talented Lucy is.
No, I mean, look, what if we switch things around on the TV show? What if we made you a successful band leader and singer?
Oh, how is that switching things around? He is a successful band leader and singer.
I know that, but what if he's the one who just wants a normal marriage, an ordinary home life? So he marries a girl with no connection to show business. You're a housewife with ordinary household problems, but it turns out that you've been secretly dying to break into show business. And all you want is a chance to prove to everyone how talented you are.
Oh, Jess, that's wonderful. I love it.
Me too, amigo. Let's tell CBS. CBS loved the idea. Madeline and Bob came home from a European trip to work with Jess on the script. And by the end of February, everything was ready to go. except for one little detail. Yes, I still don't see why Lucy's name has to go first in the credits. After all, we're both starring in the show.
We've been through this already, Desi. Lucy's just a bigger name, that's all.
Oh, wait just a second, amigo. Lucy may be big in the picture business, but in the music business, Desi Arnaz is a big name.
But this isn't the music business.
I know, but it's not the picture business either. This is TV. And on TV, neither one of us is a big name.
Look, Desi, whether you're talking movies or television, it's still acting. And as an actress, Lucy just has a bigger reputation than you.
You're right, amigo. I never have been much of an actress.
You know what I mean. You got to understand, this isn't personal, Desi. It's just that the network wants a show starring Lucille Ball, and the sponsors will feel the same way. That's just the way it is. There's nothing either one of us can do about it. Look at it this way. Giving Lucy top billing is the gallant thing to do, you know? Let the lady go first.
That's true.
And after all, you've got the title.
What are you talking about? The show's called I Love Lucy.
Yeah, you're just not looking at it the right way. I love Lucy. That's really a line of dialogue, right?
Yeah, I guess so.
So, you tell me, whose line is it?
Mine?
Of course it's yours. You're the one saying I love Lucy. You're the one telling the world how you feel about your wife. We still don't know anything about her, but now we know something important about you. Right off the bat, even before the show begins, we know you're a good guy, a good husband who loves his wife. Now, what better introduction could you ask for?
I hadn't thought about it like that.
All right, then it's settled, okay?
Okay, Jess.
Yes, Merce, what is it?
Elliot Daniel is here, Jess.
Great, send him in.
Hi, Jess.
Hi, Elliot. Meet Desi Arnaz.
Nice to meet you. What have you got for us?
Well, can I use your piano?
Please.
Well, the first thing I look for was an opening phrase that says, I love Lucy. As soon as I settled on those first four notes, the rest of it sort of wrote itself. It goes like this.
Elliot, it's perfect.
Borna, we've got ourselves a theme song. Now, let me ask you something. As you say, this theme song is really saying, I love Lucy. But according to Mr. Oppenheimer here, I'm the one saying it. So shouldn't we do it with a little Latin flair, you know, with conga drums and maracas?
Well, that could work, sure.
Great. Elliot, I think we're in business.
Now, don't forget, Jess, I did this as a personal favor for you. But you promised to keep my name out of it.
Why? What are you talking about? Why don't you want credit? It's terrific.
Well, the brass over at Fox might not think so.
Why not?
Because my exclusive contract with them doesn't run out until next year.
Oh, I see.
So if you don't mind, I just assume they didn't hear about this.
Don't worry, Elliot. I'll leave your name out of the credits.
Much appreciated.
What, Desi?
Speaking of credits, Jess, I just thought of a way to settle whose name comes first, mine or Lucy's.
And what's that?
Why don't we just make it alphabetical? As the audience took their seats in Studio A on March 2nd, Lucy and I were already backstage. But up in the control booth, our director, Ralph Levy, was beginning to get a little nervous.
Where the hell is Jess? We're supposed to start in less than 5 minutes.
Oh, there you are. We're ready to get underway.
Hold on just a minute. They need to move the beds farther away from each other.
What? Why?
According to the censor, if the beds aren't at least 36 inches apart, people might get the idea that their relationship isn't strictly platonic.
You've got to be kidding me.
Lucy's 5 months pregnant. How does the censor think that happened?
We haven't told him. So far, wardrobes managed to hide her condition.
Oh, thank God for that.
Now, where the hell did Desi go? As soon as that bed hits the mark, I need him to be in it.
Well, I just saw him backstage talking to Harry Ackerman.
Look, Desi, I already told you, we have to have a signed contract before we start.
Forget it, Harry. I'm not signing a thing until he says that the band gets paid every week. Why is that so hard for you guys to understand?
Maybe because the show only airs every 2 weeks.
So what are my musicians supposed to do? Only eat every 2 weeks?
Places, please.
I'm sorry to have to do this, Desi, but either you sign this contract as is right now or the show doesn't go on.
You can't do that.
Of course we can. We're the ones paying for it, aren't we?
Tell me something. How much is this thing costing CBS?
Let me see. Here it is. Just over $19,000.
Okay, then it's settled. I'll pay for it myself, and it'll belong to me and Lucy. Wait here while I get my checkbook.
No, no, wait a minute, Desi. That won't be necessary. If you feel that strongly about it, I suppose there's no reason we can't just go ahead and shoot it now and work out the details later. You just go ahead. We'll talk more after the show.
Places, please. Desi in position? All right, here we go. Roll kinescope. Okay, cue applause.
The pilot came off without a hitch. Of course, that was just the first step. The network still had to sell it to a sponsor. And as Jess found out when the kinescope arrived in New York, not everyone at CBS was a fan.
Yes, Merce, who is it?
It's Hubble Robinson, Jess. He's calling long distance on line one.
Thanks, I'll take it. Jess Oppenheimer.
Listen, Jess, what the hell are you sending me? I can't possibly sell this show. It's the worst thing I've ever seen.
Thanks, Hubble. You're tops in my book, too.
Now, look, Jess, it's nothing personal. I just still think we made a huge mistake agreeing to use Desi.
Well, I don't.
Well, you're entitled to your opinion. All I'm saying is, don't quit your day job.
Hubble, this is my day job.
Well, then I guess you're screwed.
Goodbye, Hubble.
The pilot didn't sell. For 6 weeks, Don Sharp and our audition film got kicked out of every advertising agency on Madison Avenue. By late April, Don was down to his last prospect, the BO agency on Fifth Avenue at 51st Street.
Hello?
Hello, Lucy. It's Don. Is Desi with you?
He'll be home any minute. Why? Have you got news?
I'll say. You're talking to the man who just sold I Love Lucy to the BO agency.
Oh, my God, Don! Can't believe it! Desi and I are actually going to have our own television show!
I never doubted it for a second.
Well, I think you're just wonderful.
Who's wonderful, honey?
Don! He found us a sponsor!
That's fantastic! Who did he get?
I was so excited I forgot to ask. Don, who's the sponsor?
Philip Morris Cigarettes.
Philip Morris Cigarettes, honey. Oh, Don, you didn't tell them I smoked Chesterfields, did you?
I was going to lead with that, but I decided against it.
Don't worry, honey. We'll just put your Chesterfields in a Philip Morris pack and nobody will know the difference.
Well, there is one thing, though.
What's that?
Well, Philip Morris wants a weekly show, so you'll have to give up making pictures for a while.
Desi, Don says they want a weekly show. I won't have any time to make pictures.
That's a big step. But it's up to you, honey.
Don, tell them we'll do it. Desi and I want to work together more than anything in the world. If that means giving up pictures, well, then that's what I'll do.
That's great, Lucy. Now, if you'll excuse me, I'm heading down to the bar to have myself a celebratory drink.
Well, don't you have to call them back and tell them we'll do it?
Nope.
Why not?
Because I already told them.
You what?
Let's just say I know my clients. Anyway, if you think I'd risk blowing this deal after what I've been through the last 6 weeks, you've got the wrong agent.
With a sponsor on board, everything finally seemed to be falling into place. Until a month later, when Jess got a phone call from Philip Morris adman, Milton Beau.
Hi, Milton. How was your vacation?
Fantastic, Jess. And the whole time I couldn't stop thinking about I Love Lucy.
Glad to hear it. We've all got a lot of confidence in the show.
Oh, great, great. That's the spirit. So tell me, how soon are you and the Arnezes making your move to Manhattan?
What? Where did you get the idea? We're moving to Manhattan.
Well, I just assumed you'd want to live in the city, but of course, if you'd rather commute from Connecticut or Long Island...
No, hold on a minute. Nobody said anything about doing a show in New York. We're doing it here in Hollywood with Kinney's for the rest of the country.
Well, don't be ridiculous. Of course you're doing it in New York. This is where most of the audience is, and they need to see it live, not on some lousy kinescope.
What's wrong with kinescope? It's good enough for Ed Wynn and the Alan Young show.
And have you seen what the kinescopes of those shows look like? If I wanted that kind of crappy picture, I could just stare at the window on my wife's washing machine.
Now, Milton, listen,
why do you think they make all the important television shows here in New York? Listen, Jess, I may love Lucy, but I'm also rather fond of my job. And I can't buy a show that only 15% of the country will see clearly, while the other 85% have to watch it through cheesecloth.
Milton, if there's been a misunderstanding, I apologize. But I can tell you that Lucy and Desi won't leave California. They're raising their family here. That's one issue they're absolutely clear on.
I'm sorry, Jess. I really like the show. But if that's the way it's going to be, you'd better start looking for another sponsor.
Now, hold on, Milton. There's got to be some way for us to work this out. Let me talk to the network.
Well, unless it's about laying transmission cable across the Rockies, I don't see what good that'll do. If the Arnezes insist on staying in California, I might as well drop the program right now and start looking for another property for Philip Marlowe.
Just give us a little time before you pull the plug. Will you do that?
Oy. You've got until the end of the week. But that's it. I probably wasted too much of my time on this project already.
I'll call you on Friday.
I just don't understand it, Jess. We were clearly talking about a Hollywood-based show.
Well, Harry, I'd say someone didn't get the message.
You really think B.O. is serious about pulling the trigger?
He practically offered me a cigarette in a blindfold.
Jesus Christ. Got any ideas?
Not really. The way I figured, there's only three kinds of shows. There's live shows from the East Coast, which Lucy won't do, and live shows from the West Coast, which B.O. won't buy. That just leaves filmed shows. But this is a situation comedy. No one's ever done one of those on films. I don't see how we'd ever convince B.O. that would work for I Love Lucy.
Hold on a second. We've got one.
We got one what?
A film situation comedy. Amos and Andy. It premieres next month.
No kidding. How does it look?
It looks terrific. But it's filmed on a soundstage with no audience. And you know how important the audience is to Lucy.
Listen, Harry, let's just take this one step at a time. We can figure out the audience thing later. But we need to get B.O. back on board right now. Come Monday, you'll be looking at a big hole in your fall schedule, and Lucy and Desi and I will all be looking for work. How quickly can you screen Amos and Annie for B.O.?
I'll make the call right now.
Good. I'll phone Desi and fill him in. Oh, and Harry.
What?
When you talk to Business Affairs, get them to finish the Philip Morris contract already. After today, I'm not going to get a wink of sleep until that thing is signed.
That makes two of us.
B.O. liked what he saw at the Amos and Andy screening. CBS agreed to produce the show on film, so Philip Morris let us stay in Hollywood. But there was still one snag. Film was going to cost an extra $5,000 a week, and B.O. wouldn't pay a penny of it. That left our agent, Don Sharp, to battle it out with CBS. Don't get up, honey. I'll get it.
Thank you, dear.
Well, boys and girls, I'd say I earned my 10% this week.
What are you talking about, Don?
Well, it took a lot of doing, but I got CBS to pony up most of the extra money it'll cost to do the show on film.
How much?
80%. Can you believe it? I got them to boost the budget by $4,000. You just have to cut your combined salary by $1,000 a week to make up the difference. Pretty sensational, huh?
That's fine, Don.
Fine? That's all you think it is? Fine?
No, I think it's great. Really great, Don. There's just one thing.
What's that?
Lucy and I want to own 100% of the show.
You do?
We do.
I've been sitting here thinking over this whole thing. A weekly show means no more tours for me and no more pictures for Lucy. If we're gambling our careers to make this television show, we should at least own what we make.
Well, but you'll be taking on 100% of the production cost overrun.
I know that.
Now, wait a second. Now, what good is owning the show if CBS still takes the same cut from what the sponsor pays each week? How are you ever going to make a profit? I mean, you'll be lucky if there's anything left over to pay your own salary.
That may be, but there's one thing nobody's thinking about.
And what's that?
The films. I just know we can make money on those films, but only if we own them outright, 100%.
Oh, great. Let's say you own the films. Just what do you expect to do with them? There's not a movie theater in the country that'll show them.
Then I'll sell them overseas.
Desi, are you sure this is a good idea?
Don't worry, honey. I'm not going to clean out our bank accounts.
Well, then where are you going to get the money?
Simple. I'll just borrow it from CBS.
CBS? Why in the world would they give away their half of the show and then turn around and help us finance it?
Because you're more important to Bill Bailey than you realize, honey. Why else would they agree to pick up so much of the extra production costs?
But what if they say no?
Then we can always take the deal that Don negotiated. What have we got to lose?
Well, I suppose it would be nice to have the films to show to our children.
Okay, Don, you talk to CBS and tell them we want the whole thing.
You're the boss.
Martin Leeds.
And Marty, this is Don Sharp.
Hey, Don, did you speak to Desi yet?
Yeah, I spoke to him.
What did he say?
We want to own all of it, Marty. Not just 50%, the whole thing.
You're out of your mind. How would you afford the production costs? Where would you get the money?
Well, don't you worry about that.
Don't tell me not to worry about that. That's what I get paid to worry about.
Now, there's no need to get excited, Marty.
I'm not excited, Don, but I can't give you the show. At the end of the day, we just end up back on the hook. I'm sorry, but you're just going to have to change Desi's mind on this.
Well, I'll see what I can do.
See what you can do about what? What did he say?
He told me to talk you out of it. He figured out the network could end up holding the bag.
Lise is too sharp. We should hire him to work for us.
Does he have final say?
Well, not necessarily.
Well, then, isn't there someone else at CBS who can make the deal we want? Harry Ackerman really believes in the show.
That's the problem, honey. If Harry's so sure it'll be a hit, there's no way he'll agree to give up the network stake. I never thought I'd say this, but it's too bad everyone at CBS is such a fan.
Well, I wouldn't say everyone.
What? What do you mean?
I didn't mention it before because I knew you'd get upset, but the head of programming, you know, Hubble Robinson, he didn't think much of our audition film.
What'd he say?
Actually, he told Jess it was the worst thing he'd ever seen.
That son of a bitch! I'd like to tell him a few things.
Well, hold on. I've got a better idea.
Your call, please.
Hello, operator. I'd like to make a long-distance call to New York City. The number is Murray Hill 53878.
One moment, please.
Thanks.
Mr. Robinson's office.
Hi, Mary. This is Don Sharp calling from L.A. Is he in?
Oh, hello, Mr. Sharp. Mr. Robinson is in a meeting right now. Can I take a message?
Well, can you see if you can break in for just a minute? This is really important.
I think the meeting is almost finished. If you'll hold on for a moment, I can check.
Thanks, Mary. I appreciate it. She's getting him.
Hello, Don. I understand you got something important to tell me.
That's right. Now listen, Hubble. I'm going to kill a couple of birds with one stone. Now, Business Affairs has agreed to increase the I Love Lucy budget by $4,000 a week. But that still leaves a weekly deficit of $1,000. So here's my solution. We'll pay the $1,000, but we want 100% ownership of the show.
Why?
Because Lucy and Desi want to own the negatives.
The negatives? What the hell do they want to do with the negatives?
Search me. Maybe they plan to show them at their kids' birthday parties.
All right. Let me get this straight, Don. You're saying CBS would still get the same cut out of what the sponsor pays each week, and in exchange for owning the negatives, Lucy and Desi would be responsible for all production cost overruns?
That's exactly what I'm saying. We'll be responsible for everything. But I need your answer right now, Hubble. The clock's running out on the deal with Philip Morris, and Desi could always change his mind.
All right, Don, you go ahead and tell Desi we've got a deal. He can have all of the show and all of the budget headaches to boot.
Well, that's what he says he wants.
Then I wish him the best of luck. I'll send you a deal memo in the morning.
I'll tell him. Thanks, Hubble. Goodbye.
Sorry for the interruption, Phil, but I just solved a little problem with one of our new programs.
Which one?
It's called I Love Lucy. You know, the one starring Lucille Ball. First, she insisted we use her Cuban band leader husband, and then we find ourselves having to produce it on film and eat the extra expense. Hell, we're not even sure how much a film program will cost.
So how did you solve the problem?
Lucille Ball and her husband have agreed to take over production of the show. We still get the same cut from each week's broadcast, but now any cost overruns are their responsibility.
That's brilliant, Hub. But why would they ever agree to that?
That's the strange part. It was their idea. It seems that they want to own the negatives.
The negatives? What good are they after the show's already been on the network?
Hell if I know. I mean, it's not like anyone will ever pay good money to show old episodes of I Love Lucy.
The deal meant that I Love Lucy was now officially a Desi Lu production. But while Don was finalizing things with the network, Lucy was doing something even more important. On July 17th, she gave me a beautiful baby girl, Lucy Desiree Arnaz. That's Lucy, L-U-C-I-E. Meanwhile, Jess, Madeline, and Bob were busy writing scripts for I Love Lucy. And they realized the show didn't have anyone for me or Lucy to talk to or plot with. So they came up with Fred and Ethel Mertz. This would allow us to pair off couple against couple or women against men. That is, if we could find the right actors for the roles.
Yes, Merce?
Harry Ackerman is calling long distance from New York on line one, Jess. I told him you were meeting with Desi, but he asked me to break in.
That's okay. I've been expecting the call. It's Harry. Desi, pick up the extension.
Okay.
Hi, Harry. Desi's also on the line. What's up?
I'm giving Mr. Paley a report on the fall schedule in a few minutes. Any news on the casting front?
Nothing on Ethel, but we found our Fred.
Great. Who is it?
William Frawley. Desi's making him an offer today at noon.
Listen, Jess, everyone in town knows Frawley's a drunk. That's just the kind of headache we don't need.
I don't care what everyone says. I said we give him a chance.
You should have seen his audition, Harry. He's perfect. Lucy thinks so, too. Frawley's just the type we're looking for. The kind of guy you'd find in a neighborhood bar.
That's what I'm afraid of.
Don't worry, we can handle him. He hasn't been working much lately, so he needs this job too much to screw it up.
Jess, I thought you liked James Gleason for Fred.
Not at his price.
How much?
$3,500 a week.
Is he nuts? That's more than Lucy's getting. What's Frawley's number?
$350 a week.
That's more like it. Well, at least the price is right. I just hope you know what you're doing.
This is television, Harry. I'm pretty sure nobody knows what they're doing.
I can't argue with you there, Jess.
Don't worry, I'll make sure Frawley knows exactly what we expect from him.
Good luck with that. I'll talk to you when I'm back in L.A. on Monday.
All right, goodbye, Harry.
I've had it with the network bigwigs saying who should or shouldn't be on our show.
Well, at least he didn't veto Frawley. I think Harry will be in our corner when we need him.
I hope you're right. Uh-oh, look at the time. I better get over to Nicolel's. I don't want Frawley having one too many before I even get there.
You're listening to I Love Lucy, A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Sitcom, here on listener-sponsored, non-commercial WBAI New York.
Now, LA Theater Works continues with I Love Lucy, A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Sitcom by Greg Oppenheimer, starring Oscar Nunez and Sarah Drew.
Hey, Arnaz, over here.
How are you doing, Bill?
Well, I'll be doing just fine once you tell me I'm hired.
Well, you did have the best audition.
Well, then what's the holdup?
Just one thing, your reputation. The network says you're an alcoholic.
Oh, sons of bitches. They're always saying that, those bastards. Listen, Arnaz, I'm telling you that I don't have a drinking problem. Waiter, can I get another drink over here?
Look, Bill, let me explain something. I don't care how much you drink. In fact, I'll drink you under the table anytime.
Yeah, you and who else?
And I don't care what CBS says. You know why?
Why?
Because they said the same thing about me.
No kidding.
Yeah, but Lucy and I have a lot riding on this project, and we've got enough problems without you lousing it up.
So, what are you saying?
I'm saying you've got the part on one condition.
And what would that be?
You're a big baseball fan, right?
Well, only the biggest. But what has that got to do with the price of eggs?
All right, here's the deal. I'll hire you for the show, but you only get 3 strikes.
Do you mind telling me what the hell you're talking about?
The first time you can't do your job, for any reason, we'll work around you. Second time, same thing, work around you. But the third time, that's 3 and you're out.
Out of what?
Out of a job.
Well, just what does this job pay again?
$350 a week.
Well, that's one hell of a lot less than my last picture. But then, this is a steady paycheck, isn't it?
It is as long as we're on the air, amigo.
Well, in that case, Cuban, you got yourself a deal.
Put it there, partner.
Uh-huh, you won't be sorry. Now, I just need you to do me one favor.
I just hired you over CBS's objections.
Okay, one more favor. I might need a couple of days off the first week in October to keep a personal commitment.
A personal commitment?
That's right. I'm not sure yet whether I'll need to take time off. It all depends.
On what?
On whether the Yankees win the pennant. If they do, I promise myself I wouldn't miss the series opener.
Ay, ay, ay. William Frawley was perfect for Fred. But finding the right actress to play Ethel had us stumped. That is, until we met with our new director, Mark Daniels.
Has anyone asked William Frawley? Maybe he has an idea who should play his wife on the show.
Oh, he has an idea, all right, Mark. But as it turns out, Ava Gardner isn't available.
Hey, you know who would be perfect? Vivian Vance.
Vivian who?
Vivian Vance.
I never heard of her. What's she been in?
Well, I directed her in Counselor at Law.
On television?
No, it was a community theater in Marblehead, Massachusetts.
Are you crazy? Lucy and I are gambling our careers on this show. And you expect us to use some amateur from community theater?
Vivian's no amateur. Oh, she's been in half a dozen Broadway shows.
Has she made any pictures?
Sure. She just finished The Blue Veil opposite Charles Laughton.
So what's she doing now?
As a matter of fact, she's in a play with Mel Ferrer at La Jolla Playhouse. We should go down and see her.
What's the play?
Well, it's a comedy called The Voice of the Turtle. I'm telling you, Desi, Viv is perfect for the part of Ethel.
Well, then let's go catch our performance.
I'll call and get tickets. Will Miss Ball be going with us?
Lucy's not going anywhere right now. She just had a baby, remember?
Oh, right. Then I'll get us 3 tickets for tomorrow night. Believe me, you won't be sorry.
Yes, I think we found our Ethel Marks.
What did I tell you?
She's got my vote. Let's offer her the part.
Great. But don't we need the network's okay?
Now listen, Mark. I know you just came aboard, but there's something you need to understand. This is a Desilu production, and I'm the president of Desilu. I don't need to ask anyone's permission to cast my own show.
Of course not. Sorry, Desi.
Look, there's 10 minutes left in the intermission. You go and tell her we want to talk to her when the play's over. You know, soften her up for us.
You're the boss. I'll be back in a few minutes.
Come on, Jess. Let's go to the lobby.
What for?
I have to go and clear this with Lucy. I may be the president, but I'm not crazy.
Come in.
You're stealing the show as usual, Viv.
Oh, Mark! I didn't know you were here tonight. I haven't seen you in ages. Oh. What have you been doing lately?
No TV anthology programs in New York. You know, Nash Air Flight Theater, Ford Theater Hour.
Sorry, Mark, I don't follow television. I just don't see any future in it. So are you still working on those shows?
No, they're not on anymore.
See what I mean? Nothing lasts on television. What are you doing on the West Coast?
Well, I just signed on to direct Lucille Ball's new TV comedy series. She's co-starring with her husband, Desi Arnaz. Now, he and the producer came with me tonight just to see you.
So, what do they think?
They think you're wonderful.
Really?
Well, how could they not? In fact, they like you so much, they want you for a part on the TV show.
Why would I want to get mixed up in that?
Because it's going to be great.
But, Mark, it's only a television show.
Viv, don't be an idiot. Take the job when they offer it to you. I've already seen 6 or 7 scripts. They're all terrific.
What kind of part is it?
Lucy's best friend, Ethel Mertz.
Ethel who?
Ethel Mertz. She and her husband Fred are the landlords. Now listen, Viv, it's a plum roll.
And what does this plum roll pay?
$3.50 a week.
I don't know. A TV series? How long would this be for?
What's a 6-month deal starting in about 5 weeks? You should do this, Viv. I know you can use the money.
Well...
Oh, come on, Viv. It'd be great to work together again.
5 minutes, Miss Vance.
Okay. I'll do it for you, Mark. And for the money.
You won't regret it, Viv. I'll go tell them the good news.
But understand, I'm only doing this until something better comes along.
What are you talking about? I just told you it's a wonderful role.
And I believe you.
Then what's the problem?
Mark, I am tired of living paycheck to paycheck. This will pay the bills, but my career's going nowhere. What I need is the lead role in a Broadway show or picture, not second banana on some television show.
But Viv...
Now, don't worry, Mark. I said I'd take the job, and I will. I'll give it everything I've got, too. I always do. But you and I both know that no matter how good I am, a year from now, nobody's going to remember a TV character named Ethel Mertz.
I Love Lucy premiered on CBS on Monday night, October 15th at 9 o'clock. And the very next morning, Milton Berle received a phone call from O. Parker McComas, president of Philip Morris.
Good morning, Parker. What can I do for you?
Milton, last night I watched that new Lucille Ball program you bought for us. And that was a mighty fine job your people did on our commercials.
Well, thank you, Parker. We aim to please.
I particularly like that authoritative-looking gentleman who delivered our new slogan. You'll be glad tomorrow you smoked Philip Morris today. most effective. You might even say it's just what the doctor ordered.
Yes. Well, I'm glad you're happy with it.
Yes, well, I only wish I could say as much for what was in between the commercials.
What do you mean?
Well, frankly, Milton, I just didn't find it funny. Tell me something. What would it cost to cancel our I Love Lucy contract?
Now, let's not be hasty, Parker. It was just one episode. A lot of new programs take a little while to hit their stride.
My gut tells me we should act now and cut our losses.
Now, Parker, you know I've been in this business for a long time. And if I've learned anything, it's that you need to base this kind of a decision on the complete set of facts. We don't even have the ratings yet. And my strong recommendation is to wait at least a week before you do anything.
You'll have the ratings by then?
That's correct.
All right, Milton, I'll give I Love Lucy 1 week. But that's all.
As it turned out, that week's ratings put us in the top 10. And the very next morning, Parker McComas sent us a telegram saying how much he loved our first episode. By April, we made it all the way to number one. But our audience kept on growing. Monday nights between 9 and 9:30, taxis would totally disappear from the streets of New York. Municipal water departments even began noticing big pressure changes during our commercial breaks. In other words, things couldn't have been going better for us.
Come in.
Hello, Jess.
What's wrong? You two look like you just lost your best friend.
Jess, we just came from the doctor. Lucy's going to have another baby.
Congratulations. But isn't this what you've been hoping for?
Oh, it's wonderful news, I know. But why did it have to happen now? We just made it to the top, and now we have to go off the air?
Why? When's the baby due?
In January, right smack in the middle of next season.
That's great. Lucy Ricardo will have a baby, too. I was wondering what we were going to write about next year.
Are you crazy? We can't do that on television. Then everyone will never let us get away with it.
Of course they will.
Jess, are you sure we're talking about the same network?
I know. We can convince CBS if we present it the right way.
The censor's not going to let us talk about Lucy being pregnant. He still makes us sleep in separate beds.
But even there, we're making progress. A year ago, they made us move your beds 3 feet apart. Now the separation's down to just 1 inch.
I think you may be underestimating the importance of that last inch.
So you'll stay in separate beds. It's not like we want to show how you got pregnant. Look, CBS has finally got the number one show on television. Do you really think they're going to throw that away if they don't have to?
But Jess...
And just think of the upside. This baby is going to be a publicity goldmine. Who else knows about this?
Only mother.
And my mother.
Well, don't tell anyone else. And make sure your mothers don't tell anyone either. If we're going to sell CBS on the publicity value, we need to let them control it.
And the gossip columnists are going to find out. They always do.
Well, just do your best. I'm going to go huddle with Bob and Madeline on a plan you and I can sell to the network.
You really think we can talk them into letting us do it?
I really do. And who knows, maybe they won't even fight us on it.
Why not?
Because this is an amazing opportunity. If you think about it, it's exactly what the show needs right now.
This is the last thing the show needs right now. Jess, this is a disaster. Talk about bad luck. Here, we finally managed to get the number one show, and now this. How could this happen?
Harry, do you really need me to explain?
Now look, you know I'm a big fan of I Love Lucy.
Really, Hubble?
Sure, I knew this thing was going to be a hit from the moment I first saw it. But the notion of writing Lucy's pregnancy into the show is preposterous. It's too risky.
Look at it this way, Hubble. The baby gives us a whole new direction for the show.
That's right. It's just the kind of assignment we need for the second season.
Listen, Desi, I Love Lucy is the number one show in the country. Why mess around with a winning formula?
Can't we just hide Lucy in baggy clothes like we did for the pilot?
Lucy was only 5 months pregnant for the pilot. By October, she won't even fit in Frawley's wardrobe.
When is she due?
January, but the doctor says she'll have to be off work from November till March.
That's 5 months. How can you possibly deliver 39 shows? You'll be lucky if you finish 22. You call that a season?
Now, wait a second. By the time we break for the summer hiatus, we'll already have 5 extra shows in the can. And if we come back in July instead of August, we can squeeze in 4 more episodes.
But that still leaves us 8 shows short. How are we supposed to fill those 8 weeks?
Simple. Just take some episodes from this season and air them again.
Are you seriously suggesting that we repeat old TV episodes on the CBS television network?
Exactly.
Well, that's never gonna happen. Viewers expect brand new television programs, not shows they've already seen. Nobody does that.
Look, Hobo, we've got piles of letters from viewers asking to see their favorite Lucy shows again. Why not give them what they want? You really think they'd rather have their favorite program go off the air?
But even if we said yes to all of this, and I'm not saying we will, dropping shows from this season into the middle of next season wouldn't make any sense. One week, Lucy would be expecting a baby, and the next week she wouldn't. It would be a confusing mess.
We thought of that, Harry. We'll shoot a new opening scene for each repeat broadcast. At the end of the scene, one of them recalls something Lucy did this season. Then we flash back to the beginning of that other episode. That way, we keep everything in sequence, story-wise.
And I suppose you expect Philip Morris to pay as much for repeats as for new episodes?
All Philip Morris cares about is how much they're paying per viewer for their commercials.
And I'll bet most people will stay tuned.
Why would they if they already know how the story comes out?
Look, Harry, we're making a sitcom here, not Alfred Hitchcock. The only reason people watch I Love Lucy is that it makes them laugh. And these shows are still funny on second viewing. You remember last week's screening of Vitamita Vegemin? Are you telling me you didn't laugh out loud all over again?
Okay, point taken. But even so, the ratings are sure to be a lot lower than for a new episode.
Maybe, but the number of TV households is growing by leaps and bounds. By this fall, there'll be millions of brand new TV viewers who've never seen these shows. And if the repeat broadcasts do get lower ratings, then you can just simply lower Philip Morris's fee.
In other words, you're expecting us to take the financial hit from this.
That's not what we're saying at all. Look, Philip Morris is paying CBS $21,000 a show, right?
Mm-hmm.
Every time we repeat a show, instead of filming a new one, we save more than $10,000 in production costs. Philip Morris can cut its fee by nearly 50%, and you still come out ahead.
Well, I'll have Marty run some numbers and see what he says.
Fair enough. Now, let's talk about publicity for a minute. At the moment, nobody knows Lucy is pregnant. We'll keep it that way for as long as we can. But even if the news gets out, the public still won't know that Lucy Ricardo is going to have a baby. When we reveal it on the show in December, it will be a bombshell.
Listen, Jess, millions of families invite us into their living room every week. We have a responsibility not to do anything those families wouldn't welcome. If young children see a pregnant woman on TV, they could ask questions. I can just imagine the letters we'd get.
Look, Hubble, America is in the middle of the biggest baby boom in history. Millions of women are having babies. Most of those young children out there are waiting for the arrival of a younger brother or sister. Do you really think there are any kids right now who've never seen a pregnant woman?
Maybe not. But I can tell you that religious groups won't like the idea of us making fun of motherhood.
We're not going to make fun of motherhood. Look, I'll show you what I mean. Let me read you something. We open on the Ricardo living room. Lucy's wearing a coat and checking her purse. She starts towards the front door. Ethel comes in from the kitchen and says,
"Good morning, Lucy."
"Oh, hi, Ethel.
Where are you going so early?"
"I thought I'd go down and see the doctor."
"What's the matter, honey? Are you sick?"
"No, I just want to get a checkup. I need a tonic or something. I've been feeling real dauncy."
"Dauncy?"
"Yeah, it's a word my grandmother made up for when you're not really sick, but you just feel lousy."
"Oh."
"I don't know what's the matter with me. I've been getting a lot of rest, and then I wake up feeling all dragged out in the morning. I don't have much energy, and yet I've been putting on a lot of weight. I just feel bleh."
"Well, maybe you need some vitamin pills or a liver shot or something."
"Yeah. Oh, listen, don't tell Ricky I went to see the doctor. No sense worrying him."
"Okay."
"Gee, I'm gonna have to go on a diet. You know I could hardly get into my dress this morning."
"Hey, Lucy."
"Hmm?"
"Wait a minute. You don't suppose..."
"I don't suppose what?"
"You don't suppose you're pregnant?"
"Oh, of course not."
Hold it right there, Jess. You can't say that on television.
"Can't say what?"
"Pregnant."
"Why not?"
"It's on the indecent words list."
"You're kidding. What's indecent about the word pregnant?"
"I don't make the rules, Jess. All I know is if it's on the list, you can't say it. End of story."
"Fine. So we'll do it without that word. Let me see. I've got it. So Ethel says...
"Hey, Lucy, wait a minute. You don't suppose..."
"I don't suppose what?"
"You don't suppose you're going to have a baby?"
"Oh, of course not. For heaven's sake. A baby?"
"Yeah, baby. That's a word my grandmother made up for tiny little people."
Now, who's going to find that offensive?
I don't know, but I'm not anxious to find out.
I'll tell you what, Hubble. If it'll make CBS more comfortable, I'll submit every one of the pregnancy scripts to a panel of clergymen.
What do you mean by a panel?
A rabbi, a priest, and a minister.
And they do what? Walk into a bar? It may make for a good joke, Jess, but I don't see how it solves our problem.
Now, wait a minute, Hub. Jess may be onto something. Having clergymen sign off on the scripts, that could save us a lot of grief from the religious community.
It won't make any difference to B.O. or to Philip Morris either. There's no way they'll go along with a pregnancy storyline. Not even if the scripts were blessed by Bishop Sheen himself.
Nobody said it was going to be easy, Hubble, but what choice do we have? Either we convince them or I Love Lucy is finished. That is, unless you've thought of another solution.
Well, no. Not really.
Then we're going to have to find a way to bring the sponsor around.
All I'm saying, Desi, is lots of luck.
Hubble, I survived the Cuban Revolution and went from cleaning canary cages in Miami to having the number one show on television. Look, is the one thing I'm not worrying about.
You're listening to I Love Lucy, A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Sitcom, here on listener-sponsored, non-commercial WBAI New York.
The BO agency flatly rejected the idea. It was a stalemate. Until one night, I decided to try a different tack.
What are you doing up so late, dear?
I'm writing a letter to the chairman of Philip Morris.
Well, what can you possibly say in a letter that'll convince him?
Let's talk about it in the morning, honey. You need your sleep.
No, I'd like to hear it. Read it to me.
Okay. Dear Mr. Lyons, as you know, Lucy and I are expecting a child, and we want Lucy and Ricky to have a baby on our TV show. You're the man who's paying the money for this show, so I guess I'll have to do whatever you decide. There's only one thing I want to make certain you understand. We've given you the number one show, and up till now, the creative decisions have been in our hands.
That's right.
Your people are telling us we cannot do this. So the only thing I want from you, if you agree with them, is that you inform them that we will not accept them telling us what not to do unless, in the future, they also tell us what to do. At that point, we will cease to be responsible for the show being number one on television, and you'll have to look to your people for that. Thank you very much for all you've done for us. Sincerely, Desi Arnaz.
It's Eddie Feldman on line one, Jess.
Thanks, Merce. Hi, Eddie.
Hi, Jess. I've got good news for you. You can go ahead and do all the pregnancy shows you want. Philip Morris has no further objection.
Wow, that's great. What brought you guys around?
Can I trust you to keep a secret?
Sure.
I'm not sure I'm even supposed to know about this. But apparently, the New York office received a telegram from the chairman of Philip Morris.
What did it say?
Just 10 words. To whom it may concern, don't mess with the Cuban.
As promised, Jess put together a panel of local clergymen to review each of the baby show scripts. They never once objected to anything, but all three of them did ask the same question.
What's wrong with the word pregnant?
In June, Luella Parsons broke the news of Lucy's pregnancy, but this just increased the public's interest in the show. Our second season premiere set a ratings record, but we still didn't know how the public would react when we began airing old I Love Lucy episodes.
Jess Oppenheimer.
Hi, Jess. Are you sitting down?
Yes. Why? What happened?
I've got this week's ratings.
Well, how do we do?
You know, he had a 62% share last week, right?
Yeah, I know all about last week, Harry. What about this week? Did we maintain our share?
Not exactly.
How much of a difference is not exactly?
25 points.
Oh, my God. Our share dropped from 62 to 37%?
Actually, it went up 25 points to 87%.
Very funny.
No, I'm serious.
Wait a second. You're telling me we repeated an old episode and our share really went up?
That's right. I can't explain it, but that's what happened. Congratulations.
Wow. Hey, maybe we should start rerunning shows on a regular basis. I might even get to see my kids now and then.
Now, don't go crazy, Jess. Your rerun idea worked this time. But you can't expect us to change our whole business model because of it.
Hey, I can dream, can I? Come in.
Jess, we just saw Dr. Harris. He scheduled Lucy's cesareans for January 19th.
January 19th? That's a Monday.
Yeah, so?
So, let's have Lucy Ricardo give birth the same day. The press will go nuts.
Sounds great to me, but I thought we were going to match the sex of the TV baby with the real one. How can we do that if they're born the same day?
We can't, but I was having second thoughts about that anyway.
How come?
Oh, we were going to shoot two endings. One for the boy, one for a girl, and then put the right one in at the last minute, right?
Yeah, so?
So we'd break our backs and spend a small fortune to do it. And for what? The TV baby and your real baby won't have the same name. So why do they have to be the same sex? Why not just decide on a boy or girl and be done with it?
Makes sense to me.
If it were my decision, I'd give the Ricardos a boy. There's more comedy potential.
I agree.
About the comedy potential?
No, that's your department.
Well, then what?
Lucy gave me one girl. She might give me another. This is the only chance to be sure I get a son. You give me a boy on TV.
Got it. One son coming up.
But Jess, let's let Lucy think making it a boy was all your idea, just in case she has a girl.
Oh, I wouldn't worry about that.
Why not?
I'll just tell her. No ad-libbing.
On January 14th, the press found out our TV baby would arrive the next Monday. Newspapers began publishing hourly bulletins. Some even ran polls betting on the baby's sex. On Sunday night, I drove Lucy to Cedars of Lebanon Hospital. And at 7:45 the next morning, I called Jess at home with an update.
Hello?
Hi, Jess, it's me.
What happened? How's Lucy?
Relax, Lucy's fine. Nothing's happened yet, but it won't be long now. They're about to start the cesarean. Dr. Howard says he's expecting everything to go off smoothly.
That's great, Desi. Give her my love, will you?
Sure, amigo. I'll call you back as soon as I hear anything.
Oh, wait. Can't you just leave the phone off the hook till they come back? The suspense is killing me.
I can if you want, but the doctor says it'll take at least half an hour. You really want to hang out for that long?
Absolutely. I'm too nervous to do anything else anyway.
Okay, amigo.
It's a boy!
Now we have everything. Hello, Jess, did you hear that? Lucy followed your script. Ain't she something?
Terrific. That makes me the greatest writer in the world.
You said it, partner. All right, well, I gotta go talk to the press.
Wait, Desi, give Lucy a message for me.
What's the message?
Tell her she can take the rest of the day off.
News of Lucy's baby sent the press into a frenzy. 7 minutes after the baby's birth, it was broadcast in Japan. In Los Angeles, school officials went around to each classroom to announce it to students. But my new son wasn't the only big news. That Monday, General Eisenhower was going to be sworn in as president the next day. For the first time in history, the ceremony would be on television. By that evening in Washington, D.C., the pre-inaugural parties were already underway. In the Crystal Ballroom at the Willard Hotel, Colonel Robert McCormick, publisher of the Chicago Tribune, stepped up to the microphone to make an announcement.
Mr. President-elect, ladies and gentlemen, honored guests, tomorrow our nation will be blessed with the inauguration of a true leader, a true patriot, and a true war hero, General Dwight David Eisenhower. Right now, however, it's time for another blessed event. The arrival of the baby on I Love Lucy. And my wife, Bertie, has made it clear to me that if I wish to live long enough to see the general sworn in as president tomorrow, I'd be advised not to make her miss tonight's episode. Fortunately for me, the hotel has been kind enough to provide us with this big 21-inch television set. So I invite you all to enjoy the program, and in 30 minutes we will resume our celebration in honor of the next president of these United States.
Our audience share that evening was an unbelievable 98.6%. 15 million more people tune into I Love Lucy than the inauguration the next day on all three networks. Lucy and I got more than a million letters, telegrams, gifts, and telephone calls. People sent us so many baby booties, bonnets, and blankets that they had to be shipped by the truckload to hospitals and other institutions. And just 1 week after we brought Desi Jr. home from the hospital, Lucy was back on stage. Not at Desi Lou, but at the Statler Hotel in Los Angeles, accepting our first Emmy Award.
And the Television Academy's National Award for the Best Situation Comedy of 1952 is presented to I Love Lucy.
Well, we didn't expect to win this tonight, but we're awfully happy we did. Thank you very, very much. And I'd like to thank everyone who's helped make I Love Lucy a good show. First, CBS and Philip Morris for having confidence in us and backing us and our pioneering ideas. The one and only Jess Oppenheimer, our head writer and producer. Love that man. Our two wonderful and talented writers who work with Jess, our youngsters, Madeline Pugh and Bob Carroll Jr. And, of course, Vivian Vance and William Frawley. Everyone should be fortunate enough to work with these two. Thank you, Viv and Bill. Oh, you get so emotional up here. Now then, there's another character in our show. His name escapes me at the moment. But this guy, who seems to be in all places at once, making like an actor, a banker, a politician, in short, a producer, gets my vote as the greatest producer of all time. And I have a brand new little Arnaz at home to prove it. Desi, I love you.
Thank you, sweetheart, and thank you, ladies and gentlemen. You know Lucy is right. A lot of very talented people contribute to the success of our show. But I think you'll agree with me, even if she won't, that there's one person who, well, without Lucy, we're all in the shrimp business. And there's just one thing I want to say, and I think she knows I mean this from the bottom of my heart. I Love Lucy was never just a title.
This is L.A. Theatre Works production of I Love Lucy, A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Sitcom by Greg Oppenheimer, directed by Michael Hackett. The cast, in alphabetical order, is Ron Botita as William S. Paley, William Frawley, Parker McComas, and others. Seamus Dever as Jess Oppenheimer. Sarah Drew as Lucille Ball. Abigail Marks as Vivian Vance and Betty Garrett. Matthew Floyd Miller as Don Sharp, Bob Lamond, Richard Denning, and others. Rob Nagel as Hubble Robinson. Oscar Nunez as Desi Arnaz. And Nick Torin as Harry Ackerman. Music performed by Doug Walter. The I Love Lucy theme song used with permission of MPL Music Publishing and Songwriters Guild of America. Original music by Doug Walter. Sound effects artist, Aaron Lyons. Production manager, Rick V. Moreno. Senior radio producer, Ron Lipkin. Associate artistic director, Annalise Erickson. Editor, Julian Nicholson. Recording engineer, sound designer, and mixer, Mark Holden for the Invisible Studios, West Hollywood. Coming up next, a conversation with playwright Greg Oppenheimer and a complete episode of My Favorite Husband, which we produced with Greg a few years back. I'm Susan Loewenberg, producing director of LA Theatre Works, and it's my pleasure to welcome you to our post-play discussion with playwright Greg Oppenheimer. Greg said Jess Oppenheimer was the creator, producer, and head writer of I Love Lucy. Greg earned a degree in art and design from MIT and has a JD from the Bolt Hall School of Law at UC Berkeley. Fortunately for us, Greg decided to give up law to become a writer and become one of the world's foremost authorities on I Love Lucy. Greg Oppenheimer, welcome to L.A. Theater Works.
Thank you, Susan.
I think we all have our favorite Lucy episodes. Greg, what is your favorite?
My favorite is called L.A. at Last, and it's the Brown Derby episode where William Holden lights Lucy's nose on fire. They put a special putty nose on Lucy that had a wick that would burn because putty doesn't burn. And it was such a wonderful episode. They had most of the Lucy shows had a block comedy scene at the end. This one had two, the one at the Brown Derby and the one in their apartment where her nose
When you
fire.
Say block comedy scene, what do you mean by that?
They're building up to a great big physical comedy bit that is just hilarious, and there's usually only one of those scenes per episode, but this one had two. And it was my father's favorite show as well. And ironically, you saw in the play that my dad gave Jack Benny tickets to Lucy to send her to school. And Jack Benny loved that episode as well, and he found out the next day that none of his writers had seen it. And so he arranged a special screening with my dad, and he forced all his writers to go to school to watch I Love Lucy.
Well, that's great. That's great. I still keep thinking, I mean, did she have anything to say about this putty on the end of her nose? I mean, was she nervous that it was going to get, her nose was going to get burned?
She was nervous that her hair was going to catch on fire.
Oh, their hair would catch on fire. Dad, right. Dad, not her nose.
No, Dad, it took several days for Dad to talk her into doing it.
Oh, really?
And it was a beautiful a moment when she was supposed to take the putty nose off and put it in her coffee. But she ad-libbed picking up the cup and put dunking her nose in with the nose putty nose still on her nose. And that's one of the few ad-libs that Lucy ever did.
Oh, that's interesting. So we found out so much about the incredible creative touches your dad came up with in developing the show. What are some of the other innovations that came out of Lucy that we take for granted on sitcoms today?
Well, it's not so much on sitcoms, but during that little short hiatus that they had to come back real fast to shoot more shows because she was pregnant, that they talked about in the play, during that summer, my dad invented the teleprompter. That allows people to look right into the lens, or the president to look at a piece of glass and read his lines off of that. And Lucy and Desi, a few people know this, but Lucy and Desi were the first people to use a teleprompter on TV for a TV commercial. They never used it on the show itself. And it wasn't because they needed it. It's because my dad needed someone to test the invention.
Because your dad what?
My dad needed someone to test the invention.
I see. But are you saying your dad actually invented it?
Yes.
He invented the teleprompter.
Yes. He was sitting at home watching TV with my mother and... an ambulance came by, and he looked at the window, and he couldn't see anything except a reflection of the room, and he couldn't see outside because it was light inside, and he realized you could use the same thing with a piece of glass in front of a camera and have the camera shoot through the glass. And everybody's been using it ever since.
That's amazing. Did he patent that?
Yes.
So you... Really? That's amazing.
Patents only last 14 years, so.
Oh, I see. Okay, well, that sounds great. So he was, in addition to being an amazing writer and inventor of all kinds of things, he was an inventor of teleprompters. And did he invent anything else?
He had about 18 patents, but that's the only one he really made money on.
Incredible. So... what was it like growing up in the entertainment business? Who showed up at your house when you were a kid?
Well, as a kid, the people who made the biggest impression on me were Hans Conried, who people remember as Percy Livermore, the English tutor that Lucy Ricardo hired because she was afraid the baby would end up speaking English as badly as Ricky. He was also the voice of Captain Hook on Disney's Peter Pan, and also the voice of Snidely Whiplash. And we went to Disneyland with the Conrads every year. And also Sherry Lewis, who made a big impression on me. She taught me to make a rabbit out of a cloth napkin. My dad ended up with an interesting typo. My dad wrote her a letter, and in a P.S. he thanked her. And there was a typo in it, and the P.S. said, "Thank you for teaching my son how to make a rabbi out of a hat."
Well, that's amazing. Any other notable visitors to the house?
Jerry Hausner, who played Ricky's agent, Jerry, would come over. And Billy Asher, who directed more than 100 episodes and later married Elizabeth Montgomery, did a show called Bewitched. But he would show up every night at dinner time, and my mother would make him a drink, and he'd sit on the sofa while we ate dinner. I knew him as Uncle Billy.
So TV was in its infancy when Lucy came on the scene. Tell us about your dad's background in entertainment and what he thought of TV as a new medium.
Well, when he was 23 years old, he came to Hollywood in 1936, and he started writing Fred Astaire's radio show, which he talked about in the play.
Did he always know that he wanted to be a writer?
Yes, although he didn't do very well with writing in school. He visited a friend of his at KFRC Radio in San Francisco. And then he wrote a comedy routine, and he submitted it. And he watched the guy totally misread it, the announcer. They gave it to the announcer to read. And he said he read it wrong. And they said, "Well, you do it. So he tried it, and everybody laughed. And they said, "Okay, kid, you're on tomorrow night, nationwide." So all of a sudden, he's on radio coast to coast. I think he got $4.50 or something for that, minus 10% for the agent. The agent was the son of the guy who owned the radio station. He was agent for everybody on the show. He wrote to Burns and Allen. He submitted a script to Burns and Allen, they rejected him. Of course, they had writers. He was dating Chico Marx's daughter. He snuck backstage at a Marx Brothers performance and hung out with her, not knowing who she was. So they ended up dating, and he submitted a script to the Marx Brothers, and Chico said, "Tell him not to quit his day job." But then he came back. He came down to Hollywood, he got a job writing Fred Astaire show. Like the first day he was in Hollywood, then Jack Benny hired him, and he was a gag writer for Jack Benny. And then he wrote for everybody in television, Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy. Ended up writing for Fanny Bryce, who was the person that Barbara Streisand played in Funny Girl.
And how did he meet Lucy and Desi?
Well, in 1948, TV was coming, and the radio budgets were being cut, and they told Fanny Bryce, who'd been on this number one show, she'd have to take a salary cut, and she quit on the spot. And so all of a sudden, after 12 years, my dad was out of a job. He just, my mother was pregnant with me. Oh, actually, no, at that time it was my sister. My mother was pretty... I shouldn't say that because she's in the audience. And they just bought a new house, and he had no job. And then Harry Ackerman called him and said, "Would you write a script for us?" They needed him because Lucy had a radio show that had started during the summer, was written by the writers for Ozzie and Harriet, but they had to go back to work on Ozzie and Harriet in the fall. So Dad wrote a script, and he turned Lucy into the character he'd been writing for Fanny Bryce, Baby Snooks. A little girl who drove her daddy crazy by being naughty. And so Lucy Ricardo, or at that time on the radio, it was Liz, became a little girl in a grown woman's body who drove her husband crazy. And that became Lucy Ricardo.
How did Lucy and Desi meet?
Desi did a show called on Broadway called Too Many Girls. or he played a college football player from Cuba, and they did the movie of it, and Lucy wasn't in the Broadway show, but they brought Desi out for the movie, and she was in the movie.
Tell us about the music we heard tonight, including the iconic I Love Lucy theme.
Yes, Elliot Daniel, who people heard about tonight, for the composer of the I Love Lucy theme.
He's the guy who comes in and doesn't want any credit because he's under contract to Fox.
Yes, he had, after a year and a half, his contract was up with Fox, and they gave him credit, and his name
so
started appearing.
So then he got the credit.
And he had the copyright. And so his interest in the show. So Desi Lu and CBS did not own the I Love Lucy theme song. It's actually owned by Paul McCartney.
How did it get owned by Paul McCartney?
I guess he bought a music library, and that was part of it. But he was nice enough to let us use it for the show.
He gave us permission to use
And the lyricist owned the other half, and because they wrote lyrics for it 3 years later, and that's the Songwriters Guild of America, and they gave their permission as well.
I see.
And the other music. Doug Walter, who's in the audience tonight.
Doug, where are you? Here's Doug. Thank you.
He performed all the instruments, arranged everything, and I asked him to arrange it and play it so it sounds like it's Wilbur Hatch conducting the Desi Arnaz Orchestra. And so that's what you heard, and I thought it was pretty authentic sounding.
Greg, this is not the first time that you and I have worked together. In 2000, we produced a version of My Favorite Husband at the Museum of Television and Radio in Beverly Hills. And we also got a taste of My Favorite Husband in tonight's play and learned all about how it evolved, the radio show evolved into I Love Lucy. How did that original radio show with Lucy and Richard Denning come to be?
It was actually Harry Ackerman's idea. He had read a book called Mr. and Mrs. Cugat. But it had nothing to do with Xavier Cugat. It was just a WASP couple named Cugat. And he wanted to make a comedy series out of it. It was a sort of a society show about a bank vice president and his socialite wife. And he talked Lucy into doing it. Actually, he didn't have to do much talking. She wanted the job so much that Don Sharp went to Hubble Robinson and said, "Lucy will do it for nothing." And she wanted to be on radio. And it started with somebody else playing the husband, but he had other commitments. And then Richard Denning took over. And then when my dad came on board, as I said, he changed the character of no longer a socialite. She was now a little girl in a grown woman's body who was always scheming. And even Liz Cugat wanted to be in show business.
So what kind of a career up until that point did Lucille Ball have? When she was doing movies, but was she doing leads or was she playing secondary roles? Or where was she at in her career when the radio show came along?
She did a lot of B-movies, and she was known as the queen of the Bs. She was in some major movies. She starred in a movie with Henry Fonda with Katharine Hepburn they're very successful, but she wasn't really a leading lady, and she was approaching 40, so it was getting a little late for her to make a big splash. So that's one of the reasons she wanted to be in radio. She also thought she'd be able to spend more time with Desi. So this show really was about their marriage, and she wanted to have a family, and she was willing to give up all of that just to be with Desi.
And how long was the radio show on the air before they decided to go into television?
Well, it
started. How long did it run?
It started July 1948. By 1949, they were trying to get her to move it to TV, and it ended in March 1951 when she had to quit because she was having a baby.
So, tell us about your book, Laughs, Luck, and Lucy, and the other Lucy-related projects you've been involved with over the years.
Well, my dad passed away in 1988, and he was working on his memoir, and I decided to finish it after he passed away. He was telling his story in his voice, and all the stories he told me growing up, I'd heard in his voice as well. And so I took everything he'd ever written, every interview he'd ever done, his diaries, everything I could find, and I sort of wove them into a book and supplemented them with my own memories. It was really a labor of love. And after that, that was published in 1996, I think. I did a book tour, and then another one when it came out in paperback. The hardcover went through, I think, 8 printings. It was very successful for a university press, but the joke I made at the time was, now if I can get them to print more than one copy at a time, I'll be in good shape. CBS heard about me because of the book tour and the publicity, and so they asked me to do liner notes for the DVDs when they started doing the Isle of Lucy DVDs. And it was actually Columbia House did the first Isle of Lucy DVDs, and I sort of shot my way into that project and ended up producing them and writing all the text and doing all the research. And
so, Greg, why do we still love Lucy? I mean, think about all the TV shows that have come and gone since she was on the air, and no matter how many times we watch I Love Lucy, it still seems so fresh and hilarious. Can you pin down the secret of her longevity and why her humor reaches across generations?
I don't think there's just one secret, but it's a combination of so many things that all work together so perfectly. I mean, the cast was wonderful. Lucy is the biggest ingredient of all of it. She had a unique talent. And the character that she was playing, kids identify with it because she's playing a kid. Really, even though she's an adult, she's playing a kid, and each generation discovers Lucy anew. And it was timeless humor. They never did any topical stuff. I think the most topical thing they ever did was some joke about they're going door to door looking for trying to identify some woman who she thinks Ricky's having an affair with, and they go to this door and they're asking her questions, like pretending they're taking a survey just to try and find this woman. And the woman is suspicious, and she says, "Your name ain't Kinsey, ain't it? Is it?" So that's about as topical as
topical
I was ever
as got.
The Kinsey report, yeah. And so, as long as people, a new generation, can keep discovering Lucy as kids, I think it'll stay popular forever. And my dad, Lucy and Desi sold their interest to CBS in 1956 for $4.5 million, which it wasn't a bad deal because then they turned around and they used the money to buy RKO, which which did very well. But they asked my dad to sell and his interest.
Said no.
And he said no. He thought
he knew.
He decided, it's not often or it's once in a lifetime. That you get to participate in something this special, and he decided to let it ride.
So he knew. He knew it was going to be a classic.
They said it's going to be an old series and not before too long. And he said, I think it's still going to play. In 1956, they showed reruns. Reruns were still new back then. But they showed reruns of I Love Lucy opposite new episodes of The Honeymooners, and they tied in the ratings.
So finally, Greg, one more thing. Tell us about the first time that you ever met Lucy.
I was 4 years old, and it was a Staten Island Ferry episode, and we got to go down and see it filmed. But before the filming started, my dad took me and my sister down to meet Vivian Vance and Lucy, and they took our pictures with them. But before that, Dad introduced me to Lucy. She kneeled down, so she'd be on level, eye level with me. And she said, "Where'd you get those big brown eyes?" And I said, "They came with a face."
They came with my face. Well, on that note, I think we will say thank you so much for doing this. Thank you so much for joining us and for creating this wonderful play. Thank you.
Thank you.
I Love Lucy, A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Sitcom, marks the second time we've collaborated with Greg Oppenheimer on Lucy-related projects. In 2000, we worked with Greg on recording our own version of My Favorite Husband, Lucy's hit radio show. Here's Liz Changes Her Mind, written by Jess Oppenheimer, Madeline Pugh, and Bob Carroll Jr. Starring Samantha Bennett, Jeff Conaway, Harold Gould, Mary Lou Henner, Joe Liss, and Allie Mills. Directed by Dennis Erdman.
It's time for My Favorite Husband.
Jello, everybody.
Yes, it's the new gay family series brought to you by the Jell-O family of desserts.
J-E-L-L-O! The big red letters stand for the Jell-O family. Oh, the big red letters stand for the Jell-O family. That is Jell-O.
Yum, yum, yum.
Jell-O puddings.
Yum, yum, yum.
Jell-O tapioca puddings. Yes.
And now, transcribed My Favorite Husband, the story of Liz and George Cooper, two people who live together and like it. You know, it's been a long time since Liz and George took their marriage vows. 10 whole years since Liz answered the preacher.
Do you promise to love, honor, and obey?
I do.
Even after 5 years of wedded life, Liz's answer was still the same.
Now, let's not argue, Liz. Remember, you're my wife, and you have to love, honor, and obey.
I do.
And how many marriages can claim that 10 years of marriage haven't changed even one word of the loving wife's answer?
Confidentially, Liz, when you and George have an argument, who wins?
I do.
Even so, the Coopers, Liz, busy young matron, and George, busy young fifth vice president of the bank, are one of the few couples we know who live together and like it. Little bird looking down on the main street of the town where Liz Cooper lives, you'd see a strange sight right about now. Cars are pulling out of the way. Pedestrians are scurrying to the curb. Dogs and small children are cowering against the buildings. For coming down the street is an automobile with Liz Cooper at the wheel. She signals for a left turn and goes straight ahead. Now she's making another signal. I don't know what that means. Oh, she's waving at George, who's waiting in front of the bank. Now she pulls over to the curb and comes to a gentle stop.
Hi, George, I'm here.
So I see.
Say, I didn't do a bad parking job, did I?
No, only two wheels are up on the sidewalk.
Come on, we're late and it's my fault. Get in.
I can't.
Why not?
The front wheel is on my foot.
Oh, it is not. Now, come on. I'm sorry I'm late, dear. Were you waiting long?
No, just a few hours.
Oh, you're so funny.
Liz, what was the big idea of signaling a left turn and then going straight?
Well, I was going to go around the block so I'd be headed the right way, but I changed my mind.
Well, you should have a special signal of your own, which means, as you were, I changed my mind. Why can't you make a decision and stick to it, Liz?
I do.
Oh, sure. I'll bet I know why you were late. You couldn't decide which dress to put on.
No, smarty. I put on the first dress I took out of the closet.
Then why were you late?
I didn't like the way it looked, so I changed it.
I thought so. Liz, I don't think you've ever gone through with anything you've started. Why do you change your mind so much? I don't.
There's a perfectly logical explanation. I'm a woman and you're a man.
Well, what's the difference?
Now, let's not fight, George. Where are we meeting the Atterberries for dinner?
The green room.
We can't go to the green room.
Why not?
I'm wearing my blue dress. I'll clash.
We're going there. They're waiting for us.
Well, I don't want to go there. What stoop decided on the green room anyway?
You did.
Oh.
Oh, we're in luck. There's a parking space. You can pull right in there.
Okay. Oh, there's a closer one up the street. I'll go there.
Oh, this is where I came in. Take this one, Liz. Finish one thing you start.
George, this one up here is much closer to... Oh, it's a fire plug.
No.
Oh, I'll back up and take that first one. Oh, look, someone's sneaking into that place. I saw it first.
Liz, will you please make up your mind and do something with the car?
Okay, dear.
Well, now what? Why are you getting out?
I just made up my mind what to do with the car. I'm going to let you park it. Mr. Atterbury.
I hope they're not angry about waiting. Hi, folks.
Hello, Liz. Hello, George boy.
Hello, George. Hello, Liz girl. I'm sorry we're late. Well, let's get some menus in order. I wonder what's good.
Try the roast beef. It was delicious.
You've eaten already?
No, he's fooling. Ha ha, Rudolph. Now shut up.
Well, I'm hungry.
Well, let's get a waiter. Oh, here comes one. May we have a... oh, well, here's another one. Waiter, are you the... Well, I'll get this one.
I'll lay 3-1.
Waiter, if you don't mind, we'd like some...
It reminds me of an inscription I once saw on a waiter's tombstone. It said, St. Peter finally caught his eye.
Well, here's a waiter I won't miss. Waiter.
Yes?
We'd like some menus.
Well, let go of my tails and I'll get you some. I'll be right back.
Oh, look, some people are leaving that table by the window. If we move over there, we can have a view while we're eating.
Remember what I told you, Liz? This table is fine.
Oh, come on, George. You'd like to move, wouldn't you, Iris?
Well, I...
You'd like to, wouldn't you, Mr. Atterbury?
Well, I...
See, George, it's 3-1.
But our stuff is already here.
Well, we'll take it with us. Iris, you carry the butter plates. Mr. Atterbury, the napkins. Yeah, George, here, you take the water glasses. I'll carry the silverware. Hurry up. Someone else is heading for it. Good. We beat him. Everybody pass the things around now.
Here's a plate of water, Iris. Would you hand me a glass of butter?
Has everyone everything they need?
Yes, I have 3 knives.
I beat you. I have a full house. 3 forks and a pair of spoons.
Hey, you better call the waiter. He's looking under the other table for us.
Olly, olly, oxen free!
Oh, waiter, waiter, dear. Here we are.
Oh, there you are.
We'll order over here.
Sorry, this isn't my table.
Oh, come on, wait on us.
Oh, all right. Here are the menus.
Let's see. Oh, everything looks so good. I'll have the,
Sorry, we're all out of
Very amusing. I'll have the roast beef.
1 roast beef.
What would you like, Iris?
I think I'll try the lamb chops.
1 lamb chops.
George, what looks good to you?
Lamb chops, huh? Oh, that sounds good, and they're not fattening either. Waiter, change mine to lamb chops, please.
Yes, ma'am. 2 lamb chops.
That's 2 for each of us.
Yes, ma'am.
And I don't want too much fat on them, but I'd like them thick.
Would you like me to trot the lamb by? You can pick out the chops you want.
Well.
Liz, don't make a scene.
Well, go ahead, George. You order.
I'd like the sirloin steak.
Yes, sir. 1 sirloin steak. How would you like it?
Rare and thick and juicy.
Right. And you, sir?
Well, I think I'll have a nice...
Gee, George, you made the steak sound so tasty and...
How would you like it, madam? Well, medium or rare?
Rare.
I'd like the pork chops.
Yes, sir. Now, what would you like to drink?
I'd like...
You order last.
Coffee.
Yeah, coffee for me, too.
Milk.
And what would you like, madam?
Pork chops, huh?
Oh, no.
Would it be too much trouble to change my order?
Why, no. Whatever gave you that idea?
I think I'd like the pork chops.
Yes, ma'am.
But why don't you write it down?
I wrote it down for you when he ordered it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now let's see if I've got this straight. Lamb chops for you, a steak for you, pork chops for you, and a new eraser for me.
You know, with all this talk about pork chops, they do sound sort of...
Now, you keep quiet, Iris. We've had enough changing of minds.
I'll get your appetizers while you fight it out.
What's the matter with you, Liz?
Well, I couldn't help it, George. Everything everyone else ordered sounded so ginger peachy.
Fine thing. Everybody's staring at us.
Who is?
That couple right there.
The ones eating the fried chicken?
Yes.
My, doesn't that chicken look good? I'll...
You wouldn't dare.
Yes, forget it.
Aw, who wants pork chops?
You'll eat them if I have to give them to you intravenously.
Some fun. Go out to dinner and can't even choose what you want. I think it's a-choo!
Bless you. What's the matter? Are you catching cold?
There's a draft here from this window.
Well, here, change seats with me.
No, that won't do any good. There's an empty table over behind those potted palms.
Stand by for another troop movement.
Sit down, Liz. We're staying here.
I'm afraid we're making a scene.
Do you want me to catch my death of cold, George? I'm not staying at this table.
Here we are, shrimp cocktails
all
around.
Don't stand up, Liz. You'll hit the waiter's tray.
Now, aren't you ashamed of yourself? Sneaking up behind me and hitting me with a tray.
Liz, I've never been so humiliated in my life. The Atterburys probably won't ever go to dinner with us again.
Oh, I'm sorry, George. I guess it was my fault. Everybody seems to think so.
Poor Mr. Atterbury with shrimp cocktails all over him.
He sure looked silly.
Well, you didn't help any trying to pull that shrimp off his face.
Well, how did I know it was his nose? Put cocktail sauce
sauce on your nose and see what it looks like.
All right, all right.
His nose looks like a shrimp without cocktail sauce.
Liz, this has been a very tiring evening. Now let's go to bed.
All right.
Well, what are you standing there looking in the mirror for?
I can't make up my mind whether I should put my hair up tonight.
That does it!
Why, George, why are you standing there looking at me like that?
I can't make up my mind whether to spank you on my left knee or my right knee.
Spank me?
Liz, I'm sick of this inability of yours to make up your mind. Now, why are you so wishy-washy?
I can't help it. My father was a wishy and my mother was a washy.
I'm in no mood for jokes.
I can see that.
Whoever started this idea that women have a special privilege of changing their minds?
Well, don't look at me. I didn't do it.
Well, I don't go for it. As far as I'm concerned, you're the same as a man.
I am?
Yes. Now, what have you got to say about that?
Let's go down to the club and have a steam.
No, I mean, as far as making decisions and getting things finished is concerned. Starting right now, when you decide to do something, you're going to do it and not change your mind.
Yes, George.
And once you start anything, you're going to finish it. Understand?
Yes, George. Ooh, I just love it when you're so dominating.
Never mind.
I give you my solemn promise, George, and I'm going to begin right now finishing what I started. Kiss me.
What for?
I started to kiss you this morning and the telephone rang.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Oh, George, you're so right about this whole thing. Come on, let's finish that again. Mm-hmm. Oh, hello, Iris.
Hello, Liz girl. What's all this stuff all over the place? What in the world are you doing?
Iris, last night I went to the George Cooper Finishing School.
Huh?
I promised George that from now on I'd finish everything I've started. I'm even going back and finishing all the things I've ever left undone.
This I've got to see.
Iris, when you hear what I'm going to do now, you'll drop dead.
What?
I'm going to clean out the hall desk. Oh, get up, Iris. Come on, I've threatened to clean out that desk for years.
If I were you, I wouldn't touch that desk till you spray it with DDT.
Oh, it's not that bad, Iris. You're exaggerating.
I am not. It's the only desk I've ever seen where the pigeonholes have pigeons in them.
Come on, I'll just open the middle drawer and... It's stuck.
I don't wonder. It's so crammed full of junk.
Help me pull it open and then jump out of the way. One, two, three. Not as bad as I thought.
How long has it been since you cleaned it out?
Not too long. There's a newspaper on top of the pile. Let's see what it says. McKinley assassinated.
What?
Oh, I remember. My mother gave me this old paper. It has a recipe on the back.
Well, where'll we start?
Well, first let's get rid of these bundles of... Oh, Iris, look what I found. Our love letters. Oh.
Now, Liz, don't start reading those now. Liz, girl.
Ooh, that George.
You better start on the desk.
I called him my little cupcake.
Oh, that's nice. But now how about
He called me his cream puff. He said he liked the way my crust was filled.
Liz, you better get this desk done.
Wait a minute. Listen to this letter. George, when you read this, I'll be far away. I'm going home to Mother.
Now there's a real love letter.
Oh, I know what this is. I wrote it after our first quarrel. Listen, I never want to see you again, you big...
Well, don't stop now.
That's all there is. I didn't finish it.
Why not?
Just as I was writing it, I got a wire from George saying he had gone home to his mother.
Did you ever get back together again?
Iris. Gee, just think how different things might have been if I'd finished this letter and sent it to George. Hey, wait a minute.
What's that gleam in your eye?
Well, I promised George I'd finish everything I started, and I started this letter, and it isn't finished.
You're not actually thinking of finishing it and sending it to him.
I certainly am. If I don't finish this letter, then I'd be breaking my word to George, and he wouldn't want me to do that. Hand me that pen, Iris. Hoo-hoo, ain't I a stinker?
Well, there's never a dull moment in the Cooper household, and there'll never be a dull menu in your household if you keep plenty of Jell-O in the kitchen cupboard. Yes, gay, shimmering, delectable Jell-O in those six delicious flavors, strawberry, raspberry, cherry, orange, lemon, and lime. All six bursting with fruit-like goodness, tempting and rich and refreshing. There are dozens of easy ways to dress up Jell-O, such as minted cherry mold. Just prepare cherry Jell-O as usual, dissolving 1/4 cup of mint jelly into hot water. When slightly thickened, fold in 1 cup of drained, diced grapefruit. It's swell for a salad, dessert, or a spicy meat garnish. Rich, fruit-like cherry jello with tangy green mint jelly. So look for those big red letters on the box. They spell Jell-O. And Jell-O spells a treat. That name is a registered trademark of General Foods.
J-E-L-L-O! The big red letters stand for the Jell-O family. Oh, the big red letters stand for the Jell-O family. That's Jell-O.
Yum, yum, yum.
Jell-O puddings.
Yum, yum, yum.
Tapioca puddings.
And now, back to the Coopers. A few minutes ago, Liz, under strict orders from George to finish everything she starts, came across an old letter she once started to write to George, telling him that she was leaving him. Obedient wife that she is, Liz is going to finish it and send it to George.
Liz Cooper, you're not really going to send it to him.
You heard the man. I certainly am, Iris. I'm merely obeying orders. Now, let's see. George, when you read this, I'll be far away. I'm going home to Mother. I never want to see you again, you big... You big... Gee, it's hard to choose.
You want me to suggest some?
No. I'll just say you big brute. There you are. Signed, Tearfully Liz. Now I'll mail it special delivery so he'll get it this afternoon.
How do you think George is going to react when he thinks you're leaving him?
I know exactly how. He'll come rushing home and beg me to stay. He'll think I found out something he's done.
Well, suppose he hasn't done anything.
Iris, you've been married long enough to know that when a man's wife tells him she's leaving him, he doesn't say, "Did I do something she found out about?" He says, "Which one did she find out about?" You just wait till this letter's delivered and watch Georgie come marching home on his knees.
Bullseye. Well, George, boy, that's the last game of darts we have time for. We have to do some bank business, you know.
You know, it was a wonderful idea of yours to put this dart game in the recreation room, Mr. Atterbury.
Thank you. Now, take the pinpoints out of the darts and put them back on the counters.
Yes, sir.
Oh, my goodness, look at the time. It's almost the end of the day.
That's right, 2:45.
Pardon me, Mr. Cooper, here's some mail for you. I thought you'd want it.
Thanks.
I thought you'd want it.
Thanks again.
What was that?
Oh, that's my new secretary. She's so new, I haven't even found out her name yet.
Well, wait till she lights someplace and then ask her.
Well, let's see what this important mail is.
Oh, Cooper boy, that letter's perfumed. Oh, you devil, you. Who's it from?
I'm darned if I know. Listen, dear sister, 2 weeks from now, we're holding our annual powwow at Old State U. Won't you be there to greet your sisters of dear old Delta Upsilon Delta? What the heck is that?
Don't you know, sister?
Oh, no wonder. It's addressed to Mrs. George Cooper, care of me.
Oh, I wondered how long you'd been powwowing with the girls.
Delta Upsilon Delta. D-U-D. Oh, that's Liz's sorority. Doesn't Iris belong to the same one?
Yeah, she's a dud, too. Iris got her invitation yesterday.
Look, tonight, why don't we talk our wives into going? It'll do them good to get away from us for a week.
Good idea. We'll insist that they go. Well, boy, it's almost quitting time. And let's go out the back way. I don't want the employees to see me leaving early.
Special delivery. Mr. Cooper? Oh, I guess they're gone. Well, it's on his wife's stationery. I guess she'll tell him what's in it when he gets home. Just leave it on his desk.
I can hardly wait for George to get home.
Liz Cooper, you didn't really send that letter to George, did you?
I certainly did, and I'm going to have plenty of fun with him before I break down and tell him the truth.
Oh, this is
so exciting.
Well, here they come. I'll bet he's terribly upset.
He doesn't sound too upset.
Oh, he's probably hysterical. Watch what he says when he comes in.
Hi, Liz. What's for dinner?
That's it, George. Keep up a front. Hide the grief that's in your heart.
What are you talking about?
Well, it smells good, whatever it is.
Go ahead, George. You can speak in front of the Atterburys.
You lost me someplace, Liz. Come again?
Did you get a letter at the bank today?
Oh, your letter.
Yes, my letter.
Well, I'm glad you reminded me. I forgot all about it.
Well, thanks a lot. Weren't you a little surprised when you opened it?
Well, as a matter of fact, I was. I couldn't figure it out at first.
Yeah, sure sounded funny when he read it to me.
George Cooper, you didn't read my letter to Mr. Atterbury.
Well, sure, why not? Oh, well, let's talk about it after dinner. It's not important.
Not important? We'll talk about it right now. What do you have to say about it?
Well, I think you ought to go.
You think I ought to go?
Well, sure. And don't worry about me. I'll get along fine. I don't know why you're crying. It'll be wonderful for both of us.
George Cooper, you ought to be ashamed of yourself.
You keep out of this, Iris. This is their affair.
Rudolph Atterbury, I think you even agree with that heel.
I do.
What?
Well, as a matter of fact, since Liz is going, I think you should go, too.
Come on, Iris. We can take a hit. Let's go.
Gee, Mr. Atterbury, I had no idea this meant so much to the girls.
Those sororities really get a hold on them, don't they, boy?
We can't sit here all night, Iris. They close the green room at midnight.
You know, I've been thinking, Liz. I'm happy. And you should be. We're free.
Yeah, we're free.
No more bothersome husbands.
No more bothersome husbands.
No more smelly pipes and awful cigars.
No more wonderful pipes and lovely cigars.
No more cold feet in the middle of our back.
This is the happiest day of my life.
Oh, we gotta stop crying. Is my mascara running?
Yes. Your face looks like it's behind bars.
You got a hanky?
Do you want a blow or mop?
Mop.
Here. There's one dry corner left.
Thanks.
Liz!
Iris!
George!
Rudolph!
You two scatterbrains, you ran away for nothing.
We did?
Yes, we stopped at the bank and George found the letter you wrote. His secretary never gave it to him.
We were talking about your sorority reunion. The announcement came to the bank in care of me.
Oh, George, I'm so happy.
Me too!
Well, let's all stay here and have dinner. It'll be a celebration.
Okay. A waiter, dear.
Oh, there you are. I've been looking for you. Now, which one of you wanted the lamb chops?
You've been listening to Liz Changes Her Mind, written by Jess Oppenheimer, Madeline Pugh, and Bob Carroll Jr., starring Samantha Bennett, Jeff Conway, Harold Gould, Mary Lou Henner, Joe Liss, and Allie Mills, directed by Dennis Erdman. L.A. Theatre Works senior radio producer is Ron Lipkin. We'll be right back.